to glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is Glow in the Dark Radio, the science fiction podcast. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordia. We've got part two of Alibi Jones' Christmas Present coming up, our short story. We had part one last week. This is a longer part, actually. Didn't quite divide nicely in half. But Alibi Jones has just accidentally gone back through time to the early days of the Vatican Assassin, his father, B.C. So this combines both Vatican Assassin and Alibi Jones at this point, as Alibi has popped back into B.C.'s world. B.C. is on assignment. He's down in Argentina. He's in Mar del Plata on the coast because a native woman from that area, a woman who's native to Mar del Plata, comes back there for Christmas Eve and goes to church. And she needs to be eliminated. So B.C. is there in Mar del Plata because he's supposed to take her out. Now all of a sudden he's dealing with this complication. This kid who's just showed up out of nowhere. He has no idea it's his son. How would he know? It's a time travel thing. So yes, Alibi has surprised a hitman at work who has no idea who he is. And even if you're his future son, that doesn't mean he's not going to kill your ass. Danger, Alibi Jones. So that's what we're getting into as we get into part two of Alibi Jones' Christmas Present, coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. The story you're hearing is now available in comic book form. You can get the brand new comic book, The Adventures of Alibi Jones number 3. It features this story, which is a standalone story, Alibi Jones' Christmas Present. The stuff that takes place in Alibi's present is illustrated by Casey Bouchard, and this is his first full-time comic book. Pretty cool. He's done a great job. And the Vatican Assassin parts, where Alibi goes back to BC's time, those are illustrated by the team that actually did the Vatican Assassin graphic novel, which is Christian Navarro on inks, art and inks, and my friend Juan Carlos Quatordia, who also does our music for the podcast. Juan Carlos doing the color for me. So the comic book is out. You can get it right now in print at indieplanet.com. You can get a PDF digital download at drivethroughcomics.com. And the big news I have this week is that the comic book is coming out on Comixology this coming Wednesday, December 18th, 1 week before Christmas. You'll be able to get your hands on Alibi Jones' Christmas Present in The Adventures of Alibi Jones number 3. It's the coolest way to read a comic digitally with their guided view. I really do like Comixology's guided view. So again, The Adventures of Alibi Jones number 3 coming out at Comixology this coming Wednesday, available in print now at indieplanet.com. or digitally as a PDF download at drivethroughcomics.com. I've got all the details at glowinthedarkradio.com. That is the big news of the week. It's at Comixology, and the book is out now. So if you enjoy the story you're hearing and you'd like to see it, you can get the comic book. It also has some very cool pinups in the back. A beautiful illustration of a Dakor by my friend Eric Orchard, the award-winning Canadian illustrator. And it has an Alibi Jones pinup done by Federico Guillen. I added the unboxing video, too, to the page there at glowinthedarkradio.com. So you can go right there and see me open up the proofs and see the print copies as I first got a look at them. So go to glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com, MikeLuoma.com. Another site to keep in mind is patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. You can get there, of course, by going to those other two I was just talking about. The big link on top. Please consider becoming a Patreon. As we head into the new year, I'm going to be providing all new material, getting a new book out, and I could use all the support you can give me. So I will be providing new stuff, new content for you, and you can help me out if you want to support me for $2, $5, or 10 bucks a month. Again, at patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. So that is the way I help keep this podcast going now. And it is a way you can help me keep the new stuff coming, the new science fiction. Depending on the response, I'll know whether or not you want me to keep doing this stuff. All right, that's enough from me. As far as this stuff goes, let's get into the story. We've got part two of Alibi Jones' Christmas Present coming up next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
The Flesh Pulp Podcast. 3 to 10 minutes of fiction brought to you thrice weekly. 200 miles below the surface of the Earth, at the terminus of a series of long-sealed caverns and interconnected shines, under the shadow of the eternally bleeding eye, there is a crippled wreck of a man writing tales. Stories of a dimension engulfed in madness. He is writing them of you. Find them all at fleshpulp.com or search for it on iTunes.
Now here's Alibi Jones' Christmas Present, Part 2, on Glow in the Dark Radio. Oh, Alibi said, rocking his head slowly back and forth. He couldn't seem to move anything else. It wasn't that he was paralyzed or anything. It was just, you tied me up!
Very observant of you, Beesy said, whoever you are.
I'm the guy tied up in your chair.
Alibi looked around. He assumed he was in BC's apartment in the rectory. Place looked like a holy hotel suite, as instead of crappy landscape paintings and pictures, there were portraits of Jesus and crucifixes on the walls. His chair was next to a small plain dinner table, along with two other chairs. On the table was a single place setting and a Christmas candle, a tall, thick white wax candle wrapped with holly, in the middle of the table.
Holy holly.
An old brown couch was nearby, angled toward a cheap entertainment unit. When Alibi twisted enough, he saw BC standing in the doorway of a kitchenette, and he saw part of a hallway on the right that led off to a bedroom and bathroom, presumably. Alibi looked down at himself, still in his jogging outfit.
You're awake, BC said. He walked over. Good.
BC leaned over the chair-bound Alibi.
So, who the fuck are you?
BC suddenly screamed in his face. Alibi turned his head away as much as he could to avoid the shouting.
Man, Alibi said, turning back. You punch hard for a priest.
I work alone, BC said, angry. No back up. So again, who are you? The reality of the situation hit Alibi. Some true fear began to rise like bile in his gut. He was tied up in a chair, and his father, an assassin who had no idea who Alibi really was yelling at him, suspicious of him, and knew Alibi knew way too much about him. BC had no idea who this guy was. And why was he here now, jeopardizing BC's mission at the last second, one he'd been working months on?
I might need to kill him, and soon.
I'm Alexander, the kid said. Alexander James. You can call me Al.
Yeah, well, listen, Al, BC said. I've run you through everything. Everything.
BC paused. Should I even tell him? Let him know I know his secret?
Ah, fuck it.
You don't exist, BC said, baffled and angry.
There.
No? The kid asked. BC backed off a little.
Well, he didn't sound surprised.
Don't know how you've pulled that one off, BC said, but you're going to tell me how you did it, if you want to live.
The kid protested.
I'm not sure I can't.
Shut up,
BC barked, interrupting. You're also going to tell me how you know who I am, and how you got into a locked church.
BC leaned back in to make his point.
Or you're dead.
Okay, the kid said, nervous.
I have to tell him something.
What do you know about time travel, BC?
The unexpected question knocked BC off his mental balance for a moment. He backed off a bit, looking dubious, but gathered his wits in a moment and grew angry again.
BC whipped out a small, silver, pen-shaped wand and waved it around, displaying the item so Alibi could see it was an incredibly powerful, portable pen laser, a sort of deadly laser pointer.
Time travel? BC asked.
No, I don't want to hear any bullshit about time travel.
BC brought the pen in close to Alibi's face.
What do you know about lasers?
BC said, close up, sneering.
See this one? Can stun, kill, or vaporize with this versatile little thing.
Keep talking.
You have a little time while I decide which setting to use. But if you want more time, I do recommend you change the subject back to how you don't exist.
Alibi tried to explain. He knew his life was on the line. He was also tired of being tied up. He tried to talk fast.
Look, I'm your relative, Alibi said. From the future, honest to God, BC. Please don't shoot me. That's why I don't show up. I don't exist yet. I was, researching you and your, exploits. Just before, I found an artifact from these time travelers called the Devrisium. I accidentally touched it, and it must have read my mind somehow and brought me here to you. I time traveled. I didn't mean to be here.
Alibi stopped for breath and to gauge BC's reaction. BC looked like he maybe believed Alibi. At least, enough not to kill him.
Really? BC said. Can't believe I'm even considering so. So then where's the artifact? Did it come with you? Has it conveniently disappeared?
No, it's here. It's an alien box, Alibi said. Over in the church. It's in one of those weird furnished closets in the back where you found me. That's how I got inside the church. I appeared there. I didn't even know it was locked.
An intercom box on a nearby desk squawked to life.
Father Campion, a tinny voice said in Spanish. Your visitor is here.
Shit, BC swore.
What did they say? Alibi asked. I have an implanted translator, but it's not working for some reason.
They said I have a visitor, BC said.
He walked around behind Alibi's chair and began to untie him.
You're lucky, BC said. You get to live for now. We'll see if your box exists after I deal with this.
BC nodded back over his shoulder to the hallway behind him.
You need to change clothes so you'll blend in better. Down the hall's my room. Clothes in the dresser and closet. I'm taller, but they'll fit you okay. Change and then stay in there until I come get you.
Alibi stood, trying to shake off the stiffness. He bent over, massaging his sore legs.
Hurry up! BC barked.
Better not push my luck.
Alibi straightened up. He smiled over at BC, then hurried down the hall.
There's something about that kid. I want to believe him. Why do I want to believe him?
What kind of relic?
BC's train of thought derailed as his visitor walked into his apartment, unannounced.
Stefan! They sent me on up, Stefan said in Spanish.
Stefan dressed to look dangerous, like some
stereotypical cartel hitman, dressed in a cheap dark blue suit with a crimson shirt. He wore his shaggy auburn hair shoulder length, with a better-groomed reddish goatee and mustache. "Come in," BC said, responding in Spanish. "Come, sit down." As BC led him over to the couch to sit down, Stefan took a small transparent box out of his suit coat pocket.
"Thanks," Stefan said, switching to English. "Found you what we talked about. Never used them before, you said."
"Killbots?" BC asked. Stefan nodded as they sat down.
"No, never."
Stefan held up the small clear box in his hands for BC to see. In the box was a thin silver bracelet, almost a complete ring, with small round nubs at the ends of a break in the circle.
"You'll love them. End up wanting to use them all the time, guarantee," Stefan said. "So easy. Keep the bracelet on your wrist till needed, and deliver with a handshake."
Stefan dropped the box into his lap and demonstrated by circling his right wrist with his left thumb and forefinger. He slid his finger and thumb down onto his hand.
"Drop the bracelet down until the nubs are on your palm, and then squeeze the nubs flat with your fingers."
He made a fist, closing his right fingers on top of his left thumb and forefinger.
"Then,"
he let go of his right hand with a flourish,
"drop the bracelet entirely. Next hand you shake, next skin you touch within 2 minutes, gets the nanos. Done."
Stefan picked up the box and handed it to BC.
"Sweet," BC said. "Big nights tonight, huh?"
Stefan said. "Christmas Eve?" BC played dumb.
"Funny," Stefan said. "You are buying killbots. Easy to figure you're after Simone Pose on her one trip home all year."
BC held the box, looking at it.
"Shh!"
BC shushed him.
"I'm speaking English," Stefan said. "We're good."
He broke off. Stefan looked distracted, as if he had heard something.
"Hey!"
Stefan jumped up and bolted towards the hallway, pulling out a small blaster.
"Who else is here?"
BC stood up, far too late to stop him.
"No one," BC shouted.
He started after Stefan.
"Bullshit,"
Stefan called back as he ran down the hall.
"I can sense these things. Naha!"
As BC arrived in the hallway, Stefan came back down it with the kid in front of him, hands over his head. Stefan held a small blaster to the kid's back. Al had been able to change. He was now dressed as a priest, though BC's clothes did run a little long for him.
"Who's this?"
Stefan asked.
"Your little brother? Spying? What the fuck?"
Stefan shepherded BC and the kid out of the hallway and over towards the table, keeping his blaster pointed at both of them.
"I know this guy."
"How? From where?"
"Wait a second."
When he finally got to see the guy's face, Alibi recognized Stefan. He was younger, but he was still.
"Finder?" Alibi asked.
"Huh?" Stefan said.
"Who?"
BC asked.
"You're Finder, right?"
Alibi said.
"I know you."
Alibi's question confused Stefan.
"You know me?" Stefan said. "Why the fuck call me Finder, then? Not my name."
Stefan looked grim. BC could tell the kid didn't know how dangerous the man was. How did he know him? In the future, he said he came from? Didn't matter. Might be enough to distract Stefan. BC edged over towards the table, but kept his back toward it so he could still face Stefan and the kid.
"Finder. That is a kind of cool name," Stefan said. "But shit. If you know me, now I gotta kill you both."
Stefan brought up his blaster, considering who he should try to shoot first. He looked ready to kill.
"Stefan, wait,"
BC protested as he backed up against the table, right arm behind his back, with the left out in front of him, aimed at Stefan in a stop gesture. Alibi wondered if he looked as scared as he felt. He was in a little over his head. But he was sure of one thing. Stefan was Finder. But Alibi was genuinely surprised at how ruthless Finder was as his younger self, Stefan. He'd either mellowed as he'd gotten older, or hit it better.
None of this was in our deal, Campion, Stefan shouted.
I know, look. As BC waved his open palm at Stefan, Alibi saw the hand BC kept behind him grab for the big Christmas candle and slide it up against his back, where he could get a good hold of it. Alibi figured BC could use a distraction. He grabbed his stomach with one hand and grabbed at the air in front of him with the other.
I'm sorry, Alibi feigned. Think I'm gonna be sick.
Stefan looked his way, angry. He turned and leveled the blaster at Alibi.
Oh, for fuck!
BC brought the candle down hard on the back of Stefan's skull with a shud, ending his sentence abruptly. As Alibi looked on, shocked, BC's little laser pen was suddenly in his hand and shooting Stefan as he lay face down on the ground. A thin laser line beamed down with a flash.
Don't kill him, Alibi protested.
Quiet, BC barked. Just a heavy stun.
He finished firing. BC and Alibi looked down at the unconscious Stefan.
Or Finder.
We have to get him out of here, BC said. Like now.
He moved to grab the man's left arm.
Gun on his right, BC said. I'll take his left. And we'll escort our drunken friend downstairs.
Between them, BC and Alibi maneuvered Stefan downstairs and out the front door of the rectory. As they half-dragged, half-carried Stefan down the front steps toward the busy street, Alibi noticed the heavy security presence. Armed security guards stood on either side of the main rectory door. Two more were nearby, at the foot of the front steps.
Too much nog, BC joked in Spanish with one of the guards on the sidewalk.
BC flagged down an autocab capsule, a small self-driving flying taxi. BC and Alibi placed the unconscious Stefan Finder in the passenger capsule. BC punched in an address, then lifted Stefan's arm and waved it at the credit sensor.
You have the credit, BC asked in Spanish.
The sensor flashed green.
Good. Get our friend home safe to Buenos Aires. Thanks.
BC and Alibi watched the cab fly away.
Father Campion!
BC and Alibi's heads turned as someone called to BC.
It's Bishop Soul, BC said to Alibi in a whisper. Keep quiet.
The bishop walked over to BC and Alibi. He looked puzzled.
I've been looking for you, he said to BC. And who's this?
This is Father Alexander, visiting from the Vatican, BC responded, BSing on his feet. He brought me some things I need, and my private communiques. The two men spoke in Spanish. Alibi had no idea what they were saying. The bishop turned to Alibi.
Hello, Father, the bishop said. I'm Bishop Soul.
Alibi looked a little panicked.
I'm sorry, Bishop Soul. He doesn't speak Spanish, BC explained to the bishop.
BC switched to English.
Father Alexander, this is Bishop Soul.
Honored to meet you, sir. Alibi said. The bishop looked Alibi over, assessing him. Alibi bowed a little to the bishop, but the bishop had already turned back to BC, apparently forgetting about Father Alexander, as he would any errand boy.
Funny, the bishop said, still in Spanish. I'd heard your guest was a less savory sort.
He changed the subject. Just came from the sacristy, the bishop said to BC. Could use some more hands getting the cathedral in order for our mass and our honored guests this evening.
Can you and the father here, if he's staying, head over and help?
Certainly, Father Rick, BC responded.
I was actually just about to show the father the cathedral. Very good.
Carry on, then, the bishop said. He turned and headed up the rectory steps.
What did he say? Was that okay?
Alibi asked.
I couldn't tell. I don't know any Spanish.
It was fine, BC said. Fine. BC turned and gestured for Alibi to follow him.
Let's get over to the church, BC said, so you can show me that box.
It should be right here,
Alibi said.
I left it right here.
BC and Alibi stood on opposite sides of the open door of a confessional booth. Inside was only an empty bench, where both had expected to see an alien box. It had taken them a while to work their way to the back of the church, having been pressed into a cleaning detail by the Reverend Gonzalez upon entering the church. BC introduced Alibi to her as his cousin, another priest, visiting as a messenger from the Vatican, who didn't know Spanish. And actually working alongside him, doing meaningless labor, he'd been warming up to the kid. But now, he was pissed.
To think, I almost started to believe you, BC said, angry.
Alibi looked over at BC, suddenly a bit scared of him. BC continued.
After Stefan, or Finder, called you my little brother, he saw a resemblance. Got me wondering who you were. But now, gee.
Wait a sec, Alibi said. He leaned into the booth. There was a glimmer of something in the air. He reached out to touch it, and the glimmer surrounded his hand. The alien box reappeared. One second it wasn't there, the next it was.
What?
BC stopped making sense as he leaned into the confessional and stared at the box.
There it is, Alibi said.
BC reached out.
Don't touch it, Alibi almost screamed. But too late.
BC touched the box. Nothing happened. BC and Alibi looked at each other as BC continued touching the alien box.
Why? BC asked.
Both BC and Alibi were confused. Alibi had expected BC in the box to zap out of there. Nothing happened. Even the glimmer was gone.
You two, a woman's voice called out in Spanish. What are you doing?
Alibi and BC turned and looked back out of the confessional into the church as whomever called them approached. Reverend Gonzalez emerged from the shadows. Alibi, not understanding her Spanish, thought she was angry at them, but didn't know why. BC knew her anger wasn't for him and Alibi.
Don't bother. Skip those, she said, almost too loud. I don't think that rich fuck is going to use our confessionals while she's down here, do you?
Probably not, Reverend Gonzalez, BC agreed. He smiled and tried to think himself in Gonzalez's way, so that she couldn't see the bizarre box in the confessional behind him. But now, Reverend Gonzalez, is that any way to talk about this diocese's biggest financial supporter? I'm told that rich fuck gives generously to the church. Alibi took his cues from BC. BC seemed relaxed, so Alibi relaxed. A little. He still tried to stand between the woman priest and the box behind him, blocking her vision. He couldn't understand a word the two others were saying. Alibi leaned into BC a little too much, almost losing balance. Gonzalez noticed the strange behavior and peered past the men into the confessional. Her eyebrows raised on her forehead, but she didn't say a word. She shook her head. Simone Pos cannot buy God's grace, Gonzalez said. She cannot buy her way out of hypocrisy. Alibi wanted to look behind him. Had she seen the box? What was she doing? What was she saying? Gonzalez leaned in to whisper at BC.
He doesn't speak Spanish, does he, BC?
Nope, BC said.
Good, she said. I don't need him reporting me.
Gone.
One of the church's bells rang out.
Shit,
Gonzalez swore.
You need to go robe up, BC, she said, suddenly all business.
Already? BC asked.
He frowned. She pressed on, turning to Alibi. We have to be in our places early, she said. But this clown isn't on the seating plan. Alibi didn't know what she was saying, but could tell it wasn't good by her tone of voice. Maybe he should hide in the confessional, she said. BC felt that finally gave him his opportunity to look, so he turned his head. The box was gone. Alibi looked to BC for his reaction, and grew alarmed to see BC looked alarmed. Gonzalez started to laugh. She'd made a joke. I'm kidding, she said. Poe's security goons would lose their shit. Alibi was still mightily confused, but he relaxed as BC smiled again. Then Alibi glanced back for the box, too, and was glad to see it had vanished. As it is, they won't let us leave the church now anyway, she said. Besides, where would we go? She's taken over the rectory. Pig. BC smiled at Gonzalez. Trying to get it all out of your system now? He asked. Yup, she said. Have to, before Mass. Besides, I know how you talk off-duty, BC. And he can't understand me. She smirked, and then she playfully elbowed BC. Go get robed up, she said. Then get set to hurry up and wait for the great Simone Pose. BC smirked. He had other plans for the great Simone Pose. He fingered his new bracelet. Alibi frowned, tired of being confused. He didn't know why his implanted translator wasn't working, but it was a problem. And now, the woman was talking to him. Or rather, looking at him, pointing at something else, and talking to BC. But first, BC, she said, tell your cousin to stand over there and... Alibi Jones stood next to a holy water font at the back of the church. He'd watched every person who entered the cathedral dip their fingers in the holy water in the basin on the top of the little stout pedestal, about waist high, and then bless themselves. His job had been to watch for spillage and wipe it away with a towel Gonzalez gave him. The cathedral was packed for the Christmas Eve service. The Mass seemed to be a big deal, but Alibi wasn't sure if that was because of the holiday or because some rich woman was visiting. The place seemed to be her hometown. At any rate, it brought out a crowd. That meant a lot of fingers, lots of blessings, and yet a surprisingly minor amount of spillage. A font attendant? Alibi mumbled to himself. Is that even a thing? He looked at the slightly moistened towel in his hand. Guess it is tonight. He'd thought about draping the small towel over one of the branches of the sparsely decorated 6-foot-tall Christmas tree that stood next to him and the font to dry it. But the towel was wet with holy water. Alibi realized even BC might frown on him treating holy things like dirty laundry. Besides, he didn't want to attract any undue attention to himself. Or to the tree, for that matter. He'd moved the DeVriesium box from out of the closet with the chair in it that BC called a confessional to sit under the tree next to him where he could keep an eye on it. Well, theoretically keep an eye on it. Hard to keep an eye on something that kept cloaking itself invisible. Oh, strangely, the box would let him see it, but it then turned invisible again, especially when others approached, as if it understood when it needed to hide. It seemed to act the way Alibi wanted it to. It had brought him back here to BC when he'd merely thought about BC in the first place. Alibi wondered, and worried, just how intricately the box was now tied into his brain. You know, Box, if you're that much in my head, you could at least translate these people for me. In the distance, up on the altar, the bishop continued proclaiming the Mass in Spanish. Alibi still couldn't understand a word he said. Alibi sighed and looked around the crowded church. It did have a certain warmth and charm,
Maybe his aunt was right. Maybe they could use a little Christmas at the Hornet's Nest. He surveyed the tree next to him again, looking it up and down.
Maybe I could take this tree back with me, huh? Hope I can just think my way back, when I can finally focus and concentrate on it.
There had been people nearby ever since Gonzalez surprised him in BC with the box. Moving the box to keep it with him had proved challenging enough. Making it visible long enough to use it, if it worked, was going to be a whole different story. If it worked, no problem. But if it didn't, Alibi would be stuck there trying to explain himself and the box, and probably trying not to get killed by BC for blowing his mission, too. A flash on the edge of his sight caught Alibi's attention.
What's that sparkle next to the tree? Oh, those aren't Christmas lights.
A low buzzing sound rose up in the air next to Alibi. BC's collar itched. He couldn't do anything about it. That was the problem at being up in the front row. Couldn't move. His eyes glanced from side to side. His mark was behind him. He would soon shake her hand, and she'd be dead. "And now, my brothers and sisters in Christ," the bishop said. BC kept his hands and wrists hidden by his priestly robes and clicked the Killbot bracelet from Stefan into place on his right wrist. "Let us offer one another." BC slid the bracelet down his wrist onto his hand until the nubs rested in his palm and squeezed as instructed, releasing the Killbots. Then, he let the bracelet drop.
"The sign of peace."
BC turned, along with the entire front row of priests in the pews. A wealthy and extravagantly attired woman glared up at him. Simone Pose. BC extended his hand.
"Peace be with you."
Busy shaking her hand, BC didn't notice the odd glow at the back of the church. Alibi watched, amazed, as the entire crowd in front of him, the whole church full of people, erupted into a frenzy of handshaking. Even more amazing, it seemed to distract them from the Devrisium box, which had reappeared and now glowed beneath the tree. They didn't even seem to have noticed the armored Devrisium in glowing silver and bright blue, who'd appeared just behind him. Alibi recognized the alien. There were only a handful of them, after all, or there had been. They should all be gone. This was Holon, master of the Devrisium's time scanners. The alien shouted at Alibi in a filtered metallic chorus of a voice.
"You!"
"Keep it down," Alibi said, staying calm.
"I have surrounded myself and you, Alibi Jones, and the thought box in a stasis field,"
Holon said.
"We are shielded from the people around us."
Around them, Alibi saw the stasis field begin to do its work. The people seemed almost frozen, now shaking each other's hands in extreme slow motion. Time was passing much more quickly inside of the field relative to the outside world. Holon held up an arm and scanned Alibi. Alibi glared at the alien, assessing the situation, feeling newly strong and defiant, reawakened from the Christmas spell he'd been falling under by the presence of an old foe. Time to fight.
"The council had you,"
Holon said.
"But by my instruments, you are at least a year older than when I left you."
"I'm a later addition, Alibi Jones," he said. "From after the Time War. That you lost."
"But?"
The alien seemed confused.
"How are you here? Now? This cannot be."
"You know, I didn't mean to be here now," Alibi said. "All I did was think about my father at Christmas time, and it brought me here." Alibi pointed at the box.
It should not work for you like that,
Halone said.
Yet I trace the ripples, the disturbances, here.
Does you no good to kill me, you know, Alibi said. It's too late. In my timeline, you already lost.
I wonder if I can bargain with him. Unfortunately, in their armor, they are hard to read.
Alibi got honest with the DeVriesium. Think I saw you implode, Alibi said. Don't trust the blue and purple guy either. He's not...
Quiet!
Halone shouted.
If the time stream itself did not protect you, I will kill you now.
Okay, fine, Alibi said, trying to calm the alien down. Since you can't kill me, can you help me get back to my time? All this disturbing rippling can't be good.
If you were removed, you and your damages would be forgotten,
Halone said.
The ripples quieted.
Alibi waited as the DeVriesium considered. Light glinted off his silver space-time armor, and the seams glowed bright blue.
Think he's considering? Hard to tell.
The DeVriesium suddenly stretched out its arms, pointing one at Alibi, one at the box. Alibi felt warmer and felt a tingling of energy, like mild static electricity, ripple across his skin. A painless bluish lightning surrounded him and seemed to fly off the box and Halone as well, connecting the three of them.
Bah,
Halone said.
If you won the Time War, my reality already unravels. And yet, you remain outside of your time speeds that chaos. So I must bring you back to your original time to slow my own destruction.
With Halone evidently about to send them back to the future, Alibi entertained an entirely different thought.
Must try to slow the coming apart,
Halone said. As Halone shouted, Alibi grabbed for the Christmas tree next to him. Alibi, the tree, Halone, and the thought box traveled ahead through time in a gray-gold haze. Alibi perceived the haze taking shape and form as it became Krish's lab, as he'd left it. Sparkling glimmers filled the air as he reappeared next to Krish.
Doing?
Krish finished asking him.
Watch out, Krish! Alibi shouted. Where did that come from?
Krish asked, startled by the sudden appearance of Halone.
Ah! Aha!
Halone said. The DeVriesium's head swiveled around, taking in their new surroundings.
I can feel it! The timeline no longer protects you, Alibi Jones!
Alibi noticed the alien was growing a weapon up and out of its arm, fashioning some sort of techno-organic blaster. Alibi then noticed something else. Halone was beginning to fade. Krish smirked. He saw it too.
Maybe the timeline no longer has to, Krish said.
What?
Halone said. The DeVriesium looked at its arm.
No!
Yes,
Krish declared.
Oh no, Alibi said. The box, too!
The box wasn't just fading. It had begun oozing an oily gray and black ooze, as if melting. It started making an odd warbling, singing sound. Halone's cry drew their attention.
Ah!
Until it faded out as he did. As Alibi and Krish turned back to the box, it bubbled into a fading cloud of inky black smoke. Then it imploded with a pop.
No, Alibi said.
What was that? Anita's sudden presence and question shocked both Alibi and Krish back into themselves. Neither saw her walk into the lab.
That was the DeVriesium tech I had hoped to have Alibi look at, Krish said, quick on his feet. Unfortunately, as you just saw, it became unstable.
Well, that is too bad, she said. And Alibi, that won't do at all.
Alibi was confused until he realized he was still holding the Christmas tree from the church
in his left hand. Well, what was left of it after traveling through time, it had gone from a full young tree about 6 feet tall to old, withered, and now only about 2 feet tall, missing most of its branches. One lone ornament still somehow clung to one branch, apparently out of sheer stubbornness. Anita shook her head and looking at Alibi's tree. Chris smiled at Anita, but gave Alibi a side-eye glance. Alibi knew Chris had already figured him out, but Chris was not telling Anita he'd found Alibi in his lab when he shouldn't have been in there.
What? Alibi said, playing innocent with his aunt. That tree, Alibi, she said. Looks like Charlie Brown's. Classic children's cartoon character. Oh, look it up, Allie. You can watch it on your way to Depot.
Okay, he said.
Where did you find that thing?
She asked rhetorically. She then turned and strolled out.
Get going, Alibi!
She called back over her shoulder. Alibi looked relieved. Then Anita popped her head back inside the lab door, startling both Alibi and Krish.
And hurry back, she said. Just got word that strange man Finder is on his way here to see you. For some reason, she said.
Gotcha, Alibi said. Will do. Anita finally left them alone. Krish gave Alibi a long, disappointed look.
Okay, stop, Alibi said, finally. I know, I'm sorry, Krish.
Well, Krish said, as if finding a bright spot, you did bring back a tree. I'll give you that.
The two laughed. Then Alibi frowned.
I am sorry, Krish, he said. Sorry to sneak around behind your back. Thank you for not telling my aunt what I did.
Krish smiled as he reassured Alibi.
You are welcome, Alibi, Krish said.
Consider it a gift. My Christmas present to you, eh?
Alibi thought of his father. Funny. What came back to him was a simple smile BC gave him when they were talking, cleaning the church, just a couple of hours ago.
Just a couple and 30 years ago.
Quite a gift, Krish. Greater than you can know. Alibi smiled back at Krish.
Speaking of Christmas, I better get going to Depot so I can get back and deal with the next thing, Alibi said.
He darkened a little as he thought of Stefan.
So, what do you suppose Finder wants this time?
The end. For now.
That was Alibi Jones' Christmas Present. Part 2, wrapping up the story on Glow in the Dark Radio. Well, happy holidays and Merry Christmas, everybody. That is a Christmas present for me to you, as well as Krish's present to Alibi. And of course, Alibi came back to the present. So there's always, I was playing with that word, present. But yes. That was a fun story to tell. And if you're not a comic book fan, you can get it in prose form, too, in the book I put out this year, the new short stories collection, 6 Short Stories. You can read it in prose form, and you can listen to the audio version again if you'd like. The full audio version is in the audiobook version, the audiobook edition of Alibi Jones' 6 Short Stories. Next week, I've got a new story for you. It's an adaptation of the story you'll find in Always Punch Nazis, Volume 2, the anthology that came out this past summer. Juan Carlos and I had a short Alibi Jones story called The Legacy in that anthology, and I'm going to adapt it for you next week. I thought I'd have it done already, but no, I am going to be actually adapting it for you next week. I've got the script, so I have to take it apart and put it back together as a narratable thing, if that makes sense. And then, after a week off for the holidays, I'm going to come back and start doing some new Alibi Jones novel work. You'll be hearing the work in progress version of Alibi Jones and the Starseeds of Earth. Which means I gotta finish that, Mother. I'm almost there! Man, it's an unwieldy beast. It's at 95,000 words now. Man. I'm sure some of that will go away, but I'm sure there will be much more added, too. So it's a daunting task, but we'll be beginning it in January. And as I was saying before we get into the chapter, you know, presenting all this new content, I can use your help, if you can do it, over on Patreon. That's a way you can support my efforts and help me keep things going here. Just head to patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio and become a supporting member. $2, $5, or $10 a month. And help me get this new content out. Because as of next week, it's all brand new. New novel on the way. You can always find out more about my books that are coming out and any free stuff that's out there by going to glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com. It's my hub. I'll get you where you need to go. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordia. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.